Hey guys, and thanks for tuning in to the first official episode to the So Dead Wrong podcast, where we discuss true crime stories told by me. Today's case is one that has sideswept the nation at full speed. I mean, I haven't seen this many people on the internet be so interactive and helpful like I've seen in just the past 2 weeks. And I full-heartedly believe that us true crime folks will help bring this case to a close. Join me as we discuss the mind-boggling disappearance and death of Gabby Petito. On July 2nd of this year, 22-year-old Gabby Petito and her 23-year-old boyfriend, Brian Laundrie, took their remodeled white 2012 Ford Transit van turned sleeper camper on a 4-month cross-country road trip. The couple opted to document their travels on social media. You know, living the van life lifestyle. On Instagram, everything seemed perfect. The couple would often post their stories of their travels and the places that they would stop to visit. Their plans were to travel from Blue Point, New York, and head west towards Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, making stops along national parks and campsites, and finally bring their trip to an end come this October. But in the midst of it all, something went so dead wrong. On September 1st, Brian, the boyfriend, showed up at his parents' house in Florida, alone and without Gabby, nowhere to be found. I'm your host, Annie Valerio, and you're listening to the So Dead Wrong podcast. Now, to give you a little background on Gabby and Brian, they had been dating for roughly 2 years, and at one point were even engaged. But being so young, they decided to take a step back and just be boyfriend and girlfriend, which I totally understand. They purchased their van in December 2020 in hopes of converting it into a camper and travel across the U.S. for a few months. Now, let's fast track to this summer, where a little razzle-dazzle happened while on their road trip. You know, a little bump on the road, if you will. On August 12th, source material from Fox News uncovered a witness dialed 911 to report a domestic dispute between Brian and Gabby in Utah. The witness told the dispatcher that the gentleman was slapping the girl. Take a listen.
Grant County Sheriff's Office.
Were you able to get a description of the intoxication?
Hi, can you hear me, sir? Yeah, I can hear you. Hi, I'm calling. I'm right on the corner of Main Street by Moonflower, and we're driving by, and I'd like to report a domestic dispute. Florida with a white van, Florida license plate, white land, gentleman.
Where's it at?
5'6" beard. They just drove off. They're going down Main Street. They made a right onto Main Street from Moonflower.
Or what were they doing?
Cooperative, but what'd you say?
What were they doing?
We drove by and the gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
Okay, you said it's a white van?
White van, I give you the license plate if you give me one sec. I took a picture of it.
See, here's the thing about that. This came out as one of the first waves of shock because as the story developed, this wasn't the original picture that was painted. Let's backtrack a little bit here. What the media showed us at first was what seemed to be a very random traffic stop by the police officer's body cam footage. The van was pulled over for speeding, and honestly, the officer admits to thinking the driver was a bit under the influence from the swerve he saw happening as he pulled them over. But what was really happening in the van was a lot more complicated than that. When police pulled Gabby and Brian over, Gabby had been uncontrollably crying. She was asked to step out of the vehicle to speak to police and explained what happened. Frantically, she tries to explain that her and her boyfriend had been fighting all morning and that her mental health issues had really been affecting her. She nervously admits to punching Brian in the arm while he was driving, and that's why the van swerved and hit a corner. Brian's face had been covered with visible marks and scratches from Gabby, so the police end up buying Gabby's story and considered her the aggressor. And although we understand it now, It would appear that Gabby was taking the blame in order to protect her boyfriend, who was literally witnessed slapping her in the face just a few minutes prior to the stop. As a resolution to the dispute, the cops asked the couple to separate for the night instead of making an arrest for domestic violence. And Brian, being so knight in shining armor, repeatedly told the cops he did not want her to go to jail. And here's the kicker. Police then put Brian up in a hotel and told Gabby, the 22-year-old, 115-pound petite female, to go camp in the van for the night, alone. Like, what? And it's not that I'm saying she wouldn't be able to defend herself, but given her emotional state, this to me didn't make any sense. But, I mean, I digress. Sometime between the domestic dispute and Gabby's official disappearance, and to be clear here, it was just 15 days before Gabby's disappearance, Brian leaves the state of Utah to fly back home to Florida and help his family move some of his and Gabby's belongings from a storage unit. Let's just pause here for a sec. You mean to tell me you're going to take a plane from out in the middle of nowhere, Utah, back home to mommy and daddy's house to help them move some things from a storage unit? What could possibly be so important to ask your son to help you in the middle of a cross-country trip anyway? But, okay, back to the story. Allegedly, Brian did fly back to Florida to help his parents with that storage unit. This took place between August 17th and August 24th. Gabby stayed in a hotel for those few days and was able to FaceTime her dad to help her buy some takeout. While Brian returned, he stayed one night and the couple were witnessed checking out the next morning on August 25th. Just a few days after checking out of the hotel, Gabby's mother noticed that she hadn't heard from her daughter. And throughout this entire trip, she had been in frequent contact with her family, you know, video chatting, texting, calling multiple times a week. So when Gabby's mother noticed that there had been a stretch of time without text messages or phone calls from Gabby, naturally, she began to worry. And here's a quote from Gabby's mother, Nicole. "I wasn't getting any responses. I believe she was in a place with no service. It was like day 8 or 9, and I became really concerned. I figured she couldn't be off the grid for that long." The last text message received from Gabby read, "No service in Yosemite." And that was the last time her mother and father, or anyone for that matter, heard from Gabby, or so they think. You see, Nicole, Gabby's mother, wasn't too sure if that was even a text message that came from Gabby. Her mother's instincts were telling her that something was wrong, and it just didn't feel like her baby girl on the other side of that phone. It's now Friday, September 1st, and Brian, like a genie in a bottle, appears at his parents' house in Northport, Florida. Yep. Police said that he had driven the van there and Gabby was not with him. You know, without his girlfriend, whom he was just traveling days before. Whom he was just traveling across the country with, and he hasn't said a single word as to why. Who, what, where, when, how, nada. Coincidentally, Laundrie's next door neighbors noticed Brian's return without Gabby, and that same weekend spoke with authorities and came forward with some very interesting information. He said he noticed the family pack up another camper and left for about 3 days the weekend that Brian returned solo. And that's just strange, to say the least. Upon their return, Brian lawyered up and refused to speak to anyone. We could imagine Gabby's family completely outraged and in disbelief after authorities knock on the Laundrie's family door and were simply handed their lawyer's phone number. They haven't been in contact with their daughter in over a week, and the person who they trusted to take care of her and who saw her last is refusing to say a single word. On September 11th, Gabby's family officially reported her missing to authorities, and this is when the nation went ham. A few days later, Brian was officially named a person of interest, and this is when things started to get a little sticky. Gabby's family is now begging in front of cameras, pleading for the Laundrie family to give them some sort of information, any indication of where Gabby could be. Brian decides to go missing. You heard that right. He fled, supposedly. Brian told his family that he was going to head to the reserves, which is about 25,000-acre plot of land full of wildlife, you know, gators and snakes and just swamp. He left on a Tuesday, and by Friday evening, his family decided to report him, quote unquote, missing to the authorities. And I know it sounds like I'm a little biased here, but as a story is unfolding in front of us, it's just so hard to believe that a caring boyfriend, someone that loves you, someone that you shared so many good times with and traveled across the United States with, just isn't wanting to be helpful. I would only think that my fiancé would want to help me, would be in front of cameras, talking to authorities, working with investigators, working with the family on any tips to find someone that you love. And so Brian just doesn't look like a good character at this time. And I'm not saying that he's guilty, but I'm definitely saying that we've seen this storyline over and over and over again. It's totally suspicious. But anyway, back to the story. As a person of interest, police immediately conducted a search to find Brian while other agencies were out west looking for Gabby. Now, could you imagine looking for two missing people in such desolate areas? I mean, with no indication as to where to even start, that's just rough. As the case started to gain traction over the internet, people on social media began calling authorities and tipping the FBI. In fact, a couple who were also recording their road trip came forward with a crucial piece of evidence. You see, as they were editing their footage, they realized they came across the little white van that belonged to Gabby. And this was the footage that took the case from a missing persons to a murder. On September 21st, a body was found in a remote area just off of a campsite where people often parked and slept overnight. The next day, authorities in Jackson, Wyoming confirmed that the body found in Grand Teton National Park belonged to Gabby Petito. Find out what happens next and join us for part two of the case, where we will be discussing the most current events of Brian's whereabouts and how folks on the internet have come forth with crucial tips for investigators. At the time of this recording, this is considered an ongoing investigation. The Northport Police Department and the FBI are working together on the case. Anyone with information regarding this case can contact 1-800-CALL-FBI. That is 1-800-225-5324. Thanks so much for tuning in to our first ever episode of So Dead Wrong podcast. Let us know your thoughts of the first episode and make sure to follow us on Instagram at So Dead Wrong Podcast. Until next time.